Now may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. I may not know much about music, but I know what I like. And a piece of classical music that I'm particularly fond of is Mozart's Symphony No. 41, or the Jupiter Symphony. It's such an uplifting and exhilarating piece of music, I think, especially the fourth movement, the final movement. And I can just about remember the first time I heard it. I don't have the musical language to describe it to you, but I can just remember how sublime it was and how the ending really caught me out. It seemed to me that the end was being signaled in the next bar or two. But then, quite delightfully, it goes on for another whole minute before reaching a final crescendo and coming to the rest. Now, I mention this because every time I read the last two chapters of John's Gospel, I feel that we're in the same kind of situation. Chapter 20, the penultimate chapter, reads like an ending. We hear of the discovery of the empty tomb, of Mary Magdalene's meeting with the risen Lord, of Jesus appearing to his disciples on the same evening, and then a week later appearing to them again when Thomas is with them. And the ending is signaled in the final verses. Now, Jesus did many other things in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book, but these are written so that you may come to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that through believing you may have life in his name. Yet it goes on into chapter 21 for another 25 verses before John's symphony finally comes to an end. And we might well ask, well, what would have been deficient about the first ending? What does this chapter add to our appreciation that Jesus brings life? Well, I'm going to offer you three thoughts this morning. Firstly, this chapter is perhaps less dramatic than the other Easter stories. Its distinctiveness seems to be in its very ordinariness. These disciples are back in Galilee. Days or weeks or months, who knows, sometime after those sensational, dramatic events in Jerusalem. And they've gone back fishing. Now, were they on a break from their apostolic ministries, enjoying a nice quiet time on the lake? Or perhaps were they disappointed people? Were they disillusioned even with how difficult discipleship now seems, now that Jesus isn't physically with them? Have they just slipped back to their old ways? Well, whatever reasons are the right reasons, this chapter has something to tell us about being a follower of Jesus in ordinary life. Then a second distinctive feature of this final chapter is the moment of recognition, the moment when the disciples discover that the risen Lord is somehow present with them. For Mary Magdalene, it had been hearing her voice called in the garden. Here, it's an abundance of fish. One of those who had gone fishing was Nathanael, we're told, the disciple who came from Cana in Galilee. The abundance of fish would have triggered a real memory for him. Jesus had attended a wedding at Cana in Galilee, and he had turned water into wine. 6 stone water jars full of it. By my reckoning, that's well over 100 gallons of wine. I think by anybody's reckoning, that is an abundance of wine. And John says it's the first sign of Jesus' glory, the first sign of who he really is. Now here, it's a catch of fish. A catch of fish so large, they can't haul it on board. And they are all big fish. There are no minnows among them. Later on, they were going to count them. 153 big fish, and their net was not torn. John is the first to voice their recognition. It's the Lord. It's the Lord. Abundance has always been the promise, the sign, throughout this gospel of Jesus' presence. Think of the feeding of the 5,000. Now here, as they struggle to land their catch, they must have remembered his words, "I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." Then thirdly, this incident is like the one concerning Thomas, in that it's an appearance to a group of disciples, and yet the focus is on one person's experience. And this time it's Peter's. The last time that Jesus and Peter stood around a fire was in the courtyard of the high priest. And there Peter had denied 3 times that he was a disciple of Jesus. Now they're meeting around a fire for a meal hosted by Jesus. A communion of disciples with their risen Lord at the center, just as we will be celebrating in a few minutes' time. Now, Jesus has a very special role for Peter to fulfill. He wants him to take on the role of being the good shepherd, as described earlier in the gospel. The good shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep. He says to Peter, "Feed my lambs, take care of my sheep, feed my sheep." Now surely if there ever was a bittersweet moment, it's this one. Because both are well aware that Jesus had made a very rash promise to the Lord and was unable to fulfill it. He had said to him, "I will lay down my life for you." But instead, he denied even knowing him. Now, for my money, if you want just one reason to be thankful for John's gospel continuing into this chapter 21, it's here with the encounter between Peter and his risen Lord. If you ever feel that you are a rubbish disciple, and I know that I feel that frequently, then this text is here for you. And if you ever feel that you have let God down so badly, there is no way back for you, then just meditate on this text. Jesus picks the most unlikely people for his work. In the Acts of the Apostles this morning, we've seen how Jesus chose Saul, the one who was breathing out murderous threats against the Lord's disciples. He's not a very nice man. Jesus chooses him for the job of being the apostle to go to the Gentiles. So see how rash and weak Peter is, and see how he is met with compassion and with grace. And appreciate the joy of Peter as he discovers that Christ has a new, renewed confidence in him, as he hears again the same call, the call that's always been the same: follow me. Well, I must bring my sermon to an end and not go on. Just as Mozart knew that he had more to express before bringing his symphony to an end, so John has more to say about the resurrection of Jesus. And thank God that he does. For he entreats us to look for the risen Lord in the very ordinariness of our lives, in the faces of the people we meet, in the midst of our own struggles and disappointments. And he reminds us that we are called to live graciously and to share the abundance of God's love for us with those around us. And he invites us to seek forgiveness for the failures of the past and to recognize, as Michael Ramsay once put it, in the recesses of our own failures, God will meet us in his love. And we are reminded that the call to follow Jesus is not for a season, but forever. Amen.